Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Welcome in once again, Mandy.
Wow,
what a month August has been, and what is shaping up to be a great September as well.
Yeah, August, you know, back to school, we're all trying to get back into our routines, and that has been great for the museum. We've had a number of folks who were moving their kids into college come to learn about Lexington, which has been exciting, and getting to share that with them, and just had a great event with the Faulkner Morgan Archive. Their Queer Here and Everywhere exhibit is on display through the middle of September, their traveling exhibit. So that's been really exciting. September, I mean, it's sports month.
Yeah.
I am so jazzed. But not only is it sports month, and we're going to get to talk a lot about sports in a minute.
Oh, big time, especially with our guest today.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
As everyone knows, Mandy Higgins loves her some sports.
No.
Particularly some Lexington sports.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to have a whole moment. But before that, I wanted to highlight just a couple of things that are coming up at the museum in September.
Oh, yes, because there's a packed calendar there.
Yes. Yeah. So as I said, the Queer Here and Everywhere will be on display until mid-September. So come see it before it travels away across the Commonwealth. On September 19th, we'll have Gallery Hop. With local artist Carrie Gow, who was just featured in The Bitter Southerner with a portrait of Silas House.
Which
is exciting. And you can learn a little bit about Silas House and Intersections, 250 Years of Lexington History, which will also be available that night.
Quick plug.
Just a small plug. And then also happening in September with 250 Lex is the Sacred Music Week Dr. McCorvey and all kinds of folks working on. And we at the museum are really, really excited to be able to host Fred Nez Keems on September 24th at noon. Mr. Keems is a member of the Navajo Nation. He plays American flutes, Native American flutes. So he will be performing at noon. There is It's a free performance, but a request to register, and you can register and find all of that information at 250lex.com. But we're thrilled to be a part of that and to have such a cool event in the museum, and particularly in that auditorium that was a church.
Yeah.
Before the Women's Club had it, and then we had, and then Bluegrass Trust had it, and now we have it. So to be part of that Sacred Music Festival in a space that was once a place of worship for folks will be really exciting. And then, of course, we have our exhibit and all of the other things that we do in September, too. So there's lots of time to come see us and to learn a little bit more about Lexington.
And September is a time also when you start to see some of those school groups coming through.
Yes. Just had a conversation with one of the Lexington schools about doing a STEM scavenger hunt with the new exhibit. So, hey, teachers, we will do these things. Give me a call. And then also in September, and Alan Stein, our guest, will be there too. The Leadership Lexington class will come through, and we love having Leadership Lexington in the museum. We talked about it in August podcast, the importance of that program. So lots of moments for group activity as well. And then, of course, our friends at the Bluegrass Trust will be hosting their lecture series in September, too. And I'm sure all of that information is on their website, but it will be in the museum. So if you have a chance to attend their lecture, you will also get to see some of our materials, and we'll be glad to have you in the space.
All right, let's get into it. And if we're talking about the history of sports in Lexington, who better than to be than your guest right here?
We're so excited to have Alan Stein here to talk to us about sports in Lexington. And Alan, real quick, before I give you the mic to just dazzle all of us. Of course, Lexington is a deep sports town and has been from its very beginning with equine racing, which we don't have to talk about racing at all because that's October.
Somebody else will do
somebody
it.
Somebody else will do it. We'll have horses elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've put a wager or two down.
I have actually owned horses along the way. As any respectable business person in Lexington should.
Absolutely.
A Kentuckian. Absolutely.
And me too.
Yeah. You
know, not exactly respectable all
well,
the time. But
yeah. Well, I don't know about that. So we've got horses. We'll deal with that another time. But every other breadth of sport in Lexington is also here, from world-class fencing and Olympic fencers to, you know, more traditional football and tennis. And, of course, baseball.
Of course.
Let's talk about baseball in Lexington, Alan.
I'm glad to do that. Yeah, Mindy, you are so right. The rich sports history here that – you know, going back to the mid 1800s, with the birth of the equine thoroughbred and particularly standardbred industries here in Lexington, we often overlook that, but it's extraordinarily important. And I grew up next door to the Red Mile, so you know I have a real affinity for that.
But, Alan, you are not celebrating your 150th anniversary this year.
Well, you know,
only the Red Mile.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, I've been involved. Kip Cornett asked me to be one of the ambassadors for the 250 Lex deal. And it occurs to me that I've been around for about 30% of the 250 years here in Lexington, so I do have some perspective of all of that stuff. But there's been a wide array of sports here in Lexington. We are a community who appreciates and loves our sports, both amateur and professional, at the highest levels of amateur and professional sports. You know, what we have had a very rich history in is minor league professional sports, team sports, that is, which I think you could easily say has been led by baseball here in Central Kentucky. And it's not just Lexington. We have a very rich history that goes back, I think, the first professional baseball teams around in Central Kentucky were the Lexington Colts from 1908. I'm probably going to be fact checked on some of these things. That was slightly before my time, but not completely.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. In the history of professional minor league baseball, there was always the major league level, which led every other kind of aspect of that. And the Cincinnati Reds in our midst here were the first professional baseball team back in the 1860s, the Red Stockings, as they were called then. And that spurred a lot of interest in the early days here in Central Kentucky. And we in Lexington and the surrounding communities in Winchester and in Frankfort and in Georgetown and in Paris all had teams that were in the hierarchy of baseball in those days were at the Class D level. And for those who are listening and may not understand how all of that works in a very simplistic way, you have a major league at the very top level, and then there's Triple A baseball right below that, Double A. Then in those days, there was A ball, B level, C level, and D level. And in the Lexington Colts and another team, the Lexington Reds, all played in the Bluegrass League. There were teams in the Kitty League, which was the Kentucky-Tennessee leagues. And we had teams all over Kentucky, especially in eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. There were teams in Paintsville and Pikeville and Prestonsburg and all the way up until the 1980s, actually. There were teams in some of those communities. The great baseball player Daryl Strawberry, who played at the major league level and was a big star for the New York Mets and the Los Angeles Dodgers, played 2 years in Paintsville. And then there was a time that he played in Pikeville. So baseball has had a rich and history and tradition here in Central Kentucky. And let me just add, and I wish my memory was a little bit better, but there was one moment in the history of a long time ago when the major league players, the famous guys, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, Lou Gehrig, guys like that, would travel barnstorming around the country. And they came to Lexington, and they played against a team from Winchester. And Winchester had a pitcher who was a short left-hander, and she was renowned throughout the country. And the story goes that in consecutive at-bats, she struck out Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb in back-to-back at-bats. So very interesting history all through the years. So that's sort of the genesis of how baseball in a professional way got started around here in Lexington.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so much of that sort of comes to a head in the 40s and the 50s with the Hustlers.
Right.
And can you talk a little bit about the Hustlers and
Absolutely.
About that story?
I love talking about the Hustlers. Again, at Class D baseball, the Lexington Hustlers were playing not in the same level of Class D baseball as was around the whole country, because baseball had not been fully integrated at any level in those days. The Lexington Hustlers in the 40s and 50s was an African-American team who played against barnstorming teams that came through with all of the famous players, the Josh Gibsons and Jackie Robinsons and Willie Mays and Hank Aarons and guys like that. And they played at a field right off of Newtown, not far from where we are here, off Newtown Road. And they had a nice stadium, and they used to draw big crowds there. They became a footnote in history as the first integrated professional baseball team below the Mason-Dixon line. Mm-hmm. The Lexington Hustlers integrated in reverse. They were an African-American team, and they recruited a few local guys, most notably in our history, Bobby Flynn, who, you know, famous longtime person in sports around Lexington, became a state legislator and an urban county government guy, and was here forever and ever and ever, and was the father of the great Major League Baseball player from Lexington who played at Bryan Station, Doug Flynn. And even more interestingly, they recruited the very first white pitcher who had played in professional baseball and was the very first scholarship athlete to play baseball at the University of Kentucky. And his name was Jim Host.
Yeah.
Which I just love telling that story. Jim and Bobby Flynn and a few others integrated the Lexington Hustlers, and they have great, great stories. And I will tell you tangentially, I was scrolling through the internet, as we do sometimes in the middle of the night when you don't have anything else to do, and there was an ad. I know none of your listeners have ever seen any ads
Never.
Come up on the internet.
Well, certainly not.
But there was one for these classic old T-shirts of minor league baseball, and the Lexington Hustlers T-shirt came up, and it was fascinating. It was the Hustlers, and it had little playing cards on it, and it said Lexington Hustlers, and it had the sponsor, Parkett Drive-In.
Oh, wow.
Which, again, you know, been around a long time. I was one of the owners of the Parkett for many years, and that struck me. And so I immediately bought three of those things.
Yes.
And took one to Mr. Host, and I'm taking one to Doug Flynn in honor of his father. And, of course, I wear mine proudly, too. So the Lexington Hustlers were a really interesting club. And they had amongst their players Scoop Brown, for whom we have named a couple of there's a road in Lexington. Scoop was a part of the Parks and Recreation Department for many, many, many years here. And Slick Lou Johnson, who later in the early 60s was drafted and played for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And in 1962, I believe, was a hero in the World Series when the Dodgers won. And both of those guys, along with Bunny Davis and Mac Madden, a number of guys who have been around amateur sports in Lexington for, you know, decades and decades, and raising up youth baseball in our community, they were also very instrumental in supporting and helping us in the around the turn of the century, in the late 1990s. Helping get us established as the Lexington Legends. And a footnote in history, when the Lexington Legends were announced to the public as the Legends, when we announced the name and we displayed the uniforms, and there were 5,000 people who came down to the old courthouse for a big event that was covered live for 90 minutes by all three radio TV stations. It was a major event in Lexington's sports history. And we had Scoop Brown and Bunny Davis and Bobby Flynn model the Lexington Legends.
I love that.
Brand new uniforms to the public. So there is a connective tissue with the Legends and the Hustlers that go back a very long way.
Yeah, before we talk more about the Legends.
Ah, yes. Let's talk more about whatever you want to talk about.
Before we get there, you mentioned Jackie Robinson, and one of my favorite Jackie Robinson tidbits and Kentucky sports history tidbits is that Jackie Robinson was enlisted in the Army at Fort Campbell. It was Camp Campbell then.
Yeah, that's right.
And played baseball.
Yes, he did.
On the Camp Campbell baseball program. And so, you know, Kentucky has that very small, it's a footnote, but he's doing Jackie Robinson, like the Jackie Robinson, is playing baseball in Western Kentucky
before he became Jackie Robinson.
And in a place that's not always associated with baseball.
That's right.
Western Kentucky is not necessarily a hotbed
for
baseball talent. But it is, I love telling that story. And that the Hustlers played against, like, these, you know, Lexington legends, legendary Lexingtons, Lexingtonians, are playing against this guy who sort of picked up baseball.
Well, I was told, Scoop Brown told me stories of when some of the barnstorming guys came through Lexington and played the Hustlers, and it included Josh Gibson and Jackie Robinson. I don't think the Stars ever played here, but Josh Gibson was here, and a number of the big stars whose names you might recognize if you go back through that history. But it's really fascinating to see that connection to history and the past, and that Lexington was more than just a footnote in all of those things.
Yeah, and now, and then you've already mentioned that in the turn of the century, which just stabbed me right in the heart, Alan, turn of the century.
Well,
you're not wrong. We're a quarter of the way through this century, and I'm really struggling with it.
It is crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, you know, from a historical perspective, this had nothing to do with sports necessarily. But, you know, I was born in early 1952. And as my children have over the years reminded me, the Korean War was going on, and my parents met and started a family right after my dad got out of the service from World War II. It's that close in thinking about that. We're closer in some cases to the Civil War in my lifetime than we are to today, which really blows my mind. Yeah. But yes. Anyway,
this is the existential crisis of being a historian.
And right. That's why this is a history podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. No
exactly. Yeah. So late 90s, early 2000s, Lexington has had this long tradition of baseball.
Right.
And of minor league pieces of baseball, but not a minor league team in the way that the Legends are. So tell us about bringing the Legends and the work that you all did.
Well, I should probably do a little bit of background on the evolution of minor league baseball itself. As we discussed earlier, from the early 1900s all the way up until the early and to mid-1990s, minor league baseball was a mom-and-pop kind of operation all around the country. And there, at one time, there were almost 250 minor league teams at all different levels playing in every little burb and community around the country. And it remained that way. And there was a loose-fitting relationship with Major League Baseball. Guys would kind of come and go, and there was no real structure necessarily to it. And in the 1990s, Major League Baseball worked a new arrangement with Minor League Baseball and developed the PBA, the Professional Baseball Agreement. And in the early 90s, the PBA set the stage for what is now modern minor league baseball, and it really transformed the game itself into an organized, standardized kind of operation. The PBA required minor league teams to have a certain level of facilities because at that time the money in Major League Baseball had started to explode. There were free agency that didn't exist before, contracts of exorbitant numbers. And in the 90s, they were already reaching, into some really significant salaries. And so Major League Baseball said, hey, we're investing in all of these players. We want to have a control over the development of these players, but B, we also want them to be nurtured in an environment that is healthy and safe and that we can control. And so the PBA required minimum standard facilities. So all of the little stadiums and fields that were all over America now were being swallowed up. And it began the process of communities and owners upgrading where they were playing and how they were investing in these facilities. And communities then started having to build certain standards of facilities. So in the early 90s, after the PBA was signed, it exploded in terms of new stadiums all over the country. At that time, the PBA organized 160 minor league official minor league teams that were affiliated directly with Major League Baseball, and those 160 communities then, in order to maintain relationships through the PBA with Major League Baseball, had to start building these new facilities. So those 160 communities from 1992 through, let's say, 2005 or 10, about 140 new stadiums were being built, and new facilities were being built in communities that didn't have baseball teams or operating minor league baseball teams before that, and Lexington was one of those. In 1984, I was still operating my first business, a college bar and restaurant on South Broadway called 803 South. And I read as a diehard baseball guy. Every week, I couldn't wait until my issue of the Sporting News came, which was the Bible for people who loved baseball. And it had all the information, all the players at every level in all the minor leagues everywhere, and up-and-coming players and everything you wanted to know. And one day in 1984, I was at the bar in the afternoon, and a couple of buddies of mine, Judge Don Paris, and another attorney, Pete Guthrie, and I, we were all talking baseball. And I opened the Sporting News that day to an article that speculated about Major League Baseball expanding into some new markets and new communities. And as the three of us were talking about that, speculating where would that be, Tampa, Denver, Phoenix, Miami, where would they possibly put teams, Montreal? It occurred to us, the three of us, that if Major League Baseball expanded, they would also have to expand at all six levels, AAA, AA, High A, Low A, short season, and rookie ball. Six levels of minor league baseball that would have to go into communities that didn't have teams. And we thought, well, Lexington ought to be considered for that. 2 weeks later, when Sporting News came out, there was a speculative article by a writer who said, these are the places where Major League Baseball ought to think about expanding. There was a companion piece right next to that. Another writer said, well, if Major League Baseball expands, where do we think minor league baseball should expand? And in that article, the writer had done some research and interviewed some owners and major league general managers and said, where would you like to see new teams? And Lexington, Kentucky was on that list, 1984. And we thought, man, this is a great opportunity. So not from a business perspective, judge and an attorney and a business owner, we just thought it would be great for Lexington to have a team because of the rich history we talked about in sports. This would be an ideal location. And we started a little advocacy group, and we raised a little bit of money, and we started talking to people. And that was in 1984. And there is a long, long story about going from 1984 to 1998, actually, 14 years of advocacy. And we weren't able to make it happen, but we got interest going and we had petitions signed. And at one point in 1991, the commissioner of baseball, Bowie Kuhn, came to Lexington to see if he could generate some excitement and enthusiasm. And along with him came John Henry Moss, the venerated, old-time, great baseball man who was president of the South Atlantic League. And John Henry was the king of baseball in minor league baseball. And I met John Henry at that meeting, and we became fast friends. And he and I together worked very hard to ultimately land a minor league franchise. And it was a complicated deal. In those days, a lot of politics. I gotta say, and to this day, Major League Baseball is a closed society of good old boys. There's just no question about it. And Mr. Moss was the goodest of all the boys, for sure. And he took a liking to me and to Lexington. And Lexington was really, at that point, by the mid-90s, was the largest community in the United States that didn't have an organized professional sports team of any sort. And so we were a natural, and that's how the Legends came about. Tangential to that, In 1998, I was in the radio business, and we sold our radio stations as a consequence of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And I found myself at 46 years old with some time and, you know, a little bit of money. And we had not been successful in convincing either our state legislature or our urban county council to build a stadium. And so I finally said, screw it, I'll do it myself. And that is how the Lexington Legends came about. We formed a group of investors. And now it was not advocacy. It was I was starting a new business. Mm-hmm. And had great, I had 22 partners, investors in our community. We kept it as local as we could. Got a great partner in Brad Redman to help finance the part of the deal that I couldn't do on my own. And we started a partnership, and the Legends were born. We opened our first office in 1998 in a little a little bitty office in Northland Shopping Center. And from that, we acquired the property adjacent to that shopping center, built the stadium. In 2001, the Legends were born.
Yeah, and quite a first year for the Legends.
It was a tremendous year. From a business perspective, it was a gobsmacking success. We set all sorts of records in Lexington. For example, before we had a name, before we had a team, a year and a half before we would even begin to play, we had identified a location, but we hadn't started construction. We hadn't locked in on anything. We sold more full season tickets to the Lexington Legends than had ever been done by any minor league sports team in the history of America. Hmm. And it's important also to note at this juncture that because we could not get support from our community, it was not because we were being selfish and thought, you know, you guys ought to build a stadium for us because we've got this great idea. In fact, it had never been done before without taxpayer and municipality support. Mm-hmm. No professional sports facility, team, field, arena, stadium had been built in America just solely with private dollars. It had never been done before. But we were unable to convince our government to at least participate. And so the Lexington Legends Field, which ultimately became Applebee's Park, was the first and at that time only private, 100% privately funded facility in the history of the United States. Now, we were the first, but it has happened a lot now.
Right.
And in fact, you'd be surprised how many privately owned facilities there are, even at the highest levels. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got such crazy money out there.
Right.
Steve Ballmer and guys like that, Jeff Bezos, they're building their own, billions of dollars. Well, ours wasn't $1 billion.
Right.
But we were able to make that happen. And we're still fiercely proud of the fact that there's still not a single taxpayer dollar at Legends Field. So that's how we
started. And you still put a quality product on the field every year in and year out.
Well, thank you for that, Alan. We're very proud of that. The first 10, 11, 12 years of our operation, of the 160 affiliated minor league baseball teams, and then there's an additional 95 teams that played independent baseball. So you had about 250 teams playing professional sports. For the first 10 years, Little Lexington, Kentucky, at low A ball, which is the fourth classification down, we're in the top 20 in terms of attendance, profitability, community engagement, which we're always very, very proud of. We won awards every year for our operations here, and it was very simple. We just started from, because we had to do this thing privately. It was our own money, and we had to figure out a way to show a profit for our investors. We were hyper acutely aware of the success metrics for the business that we were in, and it's very simple. We had to be fan-centric. It had to be all about the fan experience, everything that we did, from the ease of getting into parking to the cleanliness of the bathrooms to the play on the field. Our hot dogs had to be hot and our beer had to be cold, and our entertainment had to be engaging and fun, and it all had to be done in a safe and well-lit family environment. And we just focused hyper closely to those metrics and mantra, and that's I'm proud to say, you know, now 25 years later, that we still do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we have taken that model. Our country, our company, bought other teams around the country, the other teams are also very successful. I'm not involved. You know, we've sold everything over the years until we came back and bought the Legends again last year.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But, you know, I'm just really proud of the folks who've worked for us who honestly believe in that. Our general manager here in Lexington, Justin Ferrarella, is a young guy, but he's got minor league baseball in his blood. He's been doing this for over 10 years. He's the right kind of guy, and he gets it. And we continue to do that.
Yeah. And so you get open. It's perfect, right? Community centered, all of those sorts of things. And then the baseball is also very good, right? In that first year, winning the South Atlantic League.
Yeah, it was crazy. It can be said now. when we bought the franchise, which was a Houston Astros franchise, they were at high A in the Florida State League. And Mr. Moss and the president of minor league baseball, Pat O'Connor, had a plan called Project 95. At that time, there were 30 major league baseball teams. Well, there's still 30 major league baseball teams. But which meant that there are 30 AAA teams, 30 AA teams. But through a quirk of some sort of mismanagement along the way, there were 32 high A clubs and only 28 low A clubs. And the low A clubs in the South Atlantic League, where Mr. Moss was the president, he and Pat O'Connor created this program called Project 95, and it was their goal to balance those out. And selling two teams in the Florida State League to the South Atlantic League to balance those out at 30 and 30 was part of how we were able to acquire that team that was originally in the Florida State League at high A and now had been purchased by the South Atlantic League at low A. And we then bought the club from the South Atlantic League, and it balanced out. Well, so in our first year of operation, we had a hybrid, if you will, of high A and low A guys, which really gave us a great advantage. And the team that the Houston Astros sent to Lexington was a superior team. And we won 96 games that year, which is an unheard of number.
Incredible.
And it was great. And we ended up on that very first team. Eight of those guys, I think, made it to the major leagues. And the team played incredibly well. it was just sort of a magical time. But we sold out every single game for the first 3 or 4 years, really. But that first year, it was just magic. And we opened on April the 9th of 2001. And that first game sold out. Our seating capacity was a little over 6,000 in those days. We sold 8,000 tickets on for that opening day. 78 degrees, perfect, beautiful skies, and we won 15-1. And you know, we were off and running, and the crowds were amazing, and everybody had such a great time, and it carried forward from there.
Perfect Lexington day.
Oh,
I mean, you couldn't script it better.
You could not. You could not.
So from there,
yeah.
Can you tell us a couple of maybe your favorite memories, maybe until today, until the buyback and the changeover?
There are a lot of great memories. They're really almost too many to remember. But one of the highlights, according to some research that the Herald Leader did a number of years ago, where they listed the top 10 sports events in the history of Lexington. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that, you've had multiple national champion basketball teams at the University of Kentucky. You had a mythical 1951 UK football team national champion with Babe Parilli and all those guys, Bear Bryant. All of the incredible moments at Keeneland and at the Red Mile in the Equine. There have been amazing sports history. You know, Gabe Brewer being from Lexington and winning the Masters and all of that sort of stuff in golf. But according to the Herald Leader, the number five most important sports moment in Lexington, Kentucky was June the 6th of 2006. 666. We had what was known as the rocket relaunch.
I was there.
Yes. Well, so were 54,000 other people.
Yes.
If you know, it's very interesting.
I'm sure 330,000 people would tell you they were
You know,
there.
It's really interesting. There used to be a story about in 1951, I think it was, when Bobby Thompson hit the home run, the shot that was heard around the world. The attendance for that game, the Dodgers and Giants game, which, by the way, had a Lexington flavor. The announcer of the game, when the Dodgers won the game with a home run, a walk-off home run, and the announcer is one of the most famous calls in baseball history was, "The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants." So everybody in radio history knows that moment. Well, that announcer was a University of Kentucky graduate, Russ Hodges.
No.
How cool
wow,
is that?
That's incredible.
Now, how cool
yeah.
is that?
Did not know
well,
that.
Well, so anyway, so when Roger Clemens, the great, great Major League Baseball player, had retired, in 2005, at the end of this marvelous, unbelievable career, he retired. But after he retired after the 2005 season, he sort of hinted around that maybe he wasn't quite finished. But, you know, he didn't really want to go through spring training and work, you know, so maybe he would come back at midseason or something. So at the winter baseball meetings, I'm having lunch with Tim Purpura, who was the general manager of the Houston Astros. And there were all sorts of rumors that Roger wanted to pitch for Houston. He was from the Houston area. He's from around there. And so I'm having lunch with Tim Purpura, and I said, "Tim, you know, if Roger does come back and he signs with the Astros, our third baseman, our third baseman, Kobe Clemens, is his son." And Tim said, "Well, of course, I know that." And I said, Is he going to, are you guys going to put him in Lexington again this year? He just played for us for a year. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, he's probably going to end up in Lexington. I said, well, how cool would it be if Roger came back at midseason and needed to do a couple of rehab assignments before he got to the big leagues? If you put him in Lexington for that first rehab assignment and Kobe being playing third base, how cool would that be? And Tim goes, yeah, that's a great idea. That'll never, ever, ever happen in a million years. That would never happen. And in the middle of May, I get a call from Tim Perpura and said, well, I just want to give you a heads up. In 2 hours, we are announcing that Roger is going to sign with us, come back in the middle of June, and we're going to put him in Lexington for his first rehab assignment. Well, by then, I had become pretty friendly with Roger and his wife, Debbie, because they had been in Lexington a lot watching Kobe play. And I said, so when are you going to announce that? And he said, this was at 10 o'clock in the morning. He said, at noon.
Oh, man.
And I said, oh, my God, we're not prepared for that. So we do everything we can do to get ready. And, of course, they make the announcement, and our phones blew up. And, you know, within 20 minutes, our phone lines went down. It was in the middle of a terrible rainstorm, and I remember there was a leak in the box office, and the rain was pouring. It was, you know, it was pretty crazy. But we obviously sold that game out in 2 hours or whatever, and it became just this surreal time in Lexington. Everybody wanted to be there to see Rocket. And he came to Lexington 2 weeks early and was working out here. And for that last week, he did press conferences twice a day. We had over 200 credentials issued for that game. ESPN, I mean, this was, it was noted in the New York Times as the mother of all rehabs. And we had over 200 press credentials that were given out from all over the world. I was in a photograph with Roger on the front page of the Tokyo Times, if you can imagine that. It was absolutely crazy. And the event went off great. We announced an attendance of 9,022. I don't know if it was more than that. It certainly wasn't less. And that moment in time was spectacular. And there's one funny, and Roger was great. And the whole time he was here, he was helping raise money for his foundation and for ours. We did some things with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We did an event where you could pay to take batting practice against Roger for your kid or yourself or whatever. And we raised $50,000 doing that. Roger himself came into our clubhouse and replaced all the carpet, all the furniture, new TVs, the whole. I mean, it was just really a really great event for Lexington and for us. But he pitched three innings. In the bottom of the in the top of the third inning, there were two outs and there was nobody on, and Roger got two strikes on this. What was probably going to be the last hitter, gets two strikes on a guy, and all of a sudden, everybody in the whole place stand up, and they're shouting and screaming and going crazy. Roger calls timeout on the mound, and he points at Kobe, and he has Kobe come to the mound, and he says, here's what Kobe tells us later. He said, do they always get this crazy when you get two strikes on a guy here? And Kobe said, no, Dad, if you strike this guy out, everybody gets free wiper fluid.
It's like
one of those crazy promotions that we did in those days. And so, of course, he struck him out. Yeah. And everybody went crazy. It was That has to be one of, if not, the biggest moments in the history of the Lexington Legends. But there have been so many. We've won numerous championships. I think in Lexington, we've won 4 or 5 championships over the years. There have been over 120 former legends who have played in the major leagues, some of them at the very highest level. I think 15 or 18 of our guys have made all-star teams at the big league level. We've had World Series MVPs. Ben Zobrist played for us for a year, was the MVP when the Cubs were in the series. Hunter Pence, one of the most famous baseball players in the country, played in Lexington, and he became a star when he was here. He was not the most heralded kid coming in that year, but he just blossomed when he was in Lexington and became a huge star. But I think the most accomplished, not counting Roger Clemens, the most accomplished player that we've ever had in a Legends uniform is Jose Altuve. And for baseball fans, Jose Altuve is on his way to the Hall of Fame. He'll end up with 3,000 hits. The kid was a great, great player. And I'll tell a funny story on myself. Every year when the new players would come in, we'd have a press conference, and the press would ask me, well, who do we look for? Who's going to be really good? And that sort of stuff. And Jose was not one of the guys I mentioned. And about halfway through the year, a reporter said, what do you think about this Jose Altuve kid? I think it was John Clay. And I said, you know, it's really a shame. That kid is a great player, and he's a good kid. He works every day with me. I have lunch with him once a week. He's working on his English. He wants to be great. And the kid can play, and he can hit like in nobody's business. I said, but it's a shame. He's only 5'5". He'll never make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, famous last words.
Hat on.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was wrong about that.
I hope that you get to tell that at his Hall of Fame induction.
I would like that. I have talked to Jose a couple of times over the years, and I have told him that story. Of course, he just laughs, and he said, Mr. Stein, you're not the only one who said that.
That's incredible.
But it's been a lot of fun. In present day, for a lot of reasons, and I wasn't there. Our group sold interest in the ball club, and I actually retired after the 2011 season. And the ownership that succeeded us didn't have quite the same success, and their business metrics were different than ours. But you know, you buy a team and spend millions of dollars to do so you have every privilege to do what you want to with it. But they were pretty much on the verge of going away after a number of years. And long story short, we put together an investment group and partnered with a company from North Carolina who operated other teams, Andy Sandler and his company, Temerity Baseball. And we bought the club back last year. And I am very happy to say that it has been a great success. We've spent a lot of money and a lot of effort getting back to our original mantras for success, and it's worked out really well. Our attendance from the time we bought the club at the beginning of last year to what will end this season in 2025, our 25th year, we will have tripled the attendance from when we bought it. All our sponsorships are way up, and the fans are having a great time. And we're doing things like we used to, bringing back national acts and entertaining the fans again, and music on the plaza and all those sorts of things. And the future is very bright.
That's fantastic. And it's great for Lexington to have, because you and the soccer team are the only professionals.
The soccer guys are doing a great job. That facility, I hope everybody gets a chance to go out and watch them and support them. They are doing a fantastic job. That facility is second to none. But, you know, there's been a lot of sports that have come and gone in professional sports in Lexington just in the, you know, last 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved in a couple of them. But we, you know, we had a very successful minor league hockey team.
The Thoroughblades.
The Thoroughblades.
We just got two Thoroughblade sticks donated to the museum.
Oh, great.
Which I love.
Yeah, that's great. Well, they were a great operation. And they did a great job, by the way. The problem was they didn't have a facility, and so they had to play at Rupp Arena, and that was just not an economically sustainable deal for them. They were there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And they were at the highest level of minor league hockey. They had the second highest average attendance over those 5 years of all of minor league hockey, and they had the highest average ticket price.
Oh, wow.
You would think those metrics would mean success.
Right.
But unfortunately, and it's nobody's fault. I mean, Rupp Arena is a world-class facility, and it costs a lot of money to operate there. And they were drawing 5,000 people a night in a 20,000 facility that was very expensive to transition from concerts or basketball back and forth to hockey and that sort of thing. So they couldn't make it, unfortunately. But they were successful. And so they were around for 5 years. And there were a couple of hockey teams after that. Mm-hmm. And there was indoor football and arena football. And we had minor league basketball. And we've done some things out at the horse park and in the All-Tech Arena. And now, of course, we've got professional soccer at a very high level. There's been a good history. But I like to remind people that the Lexington Legends are the longest and long-term continuous operating professional sports team in the history of Lexington. And by a long shot, you know, we're in our 25th year. You know, the hockey guys, the best, were 5 years. The soccer guys just getting started. Mm-hmm. They'll be there for 25 years. I'm confident of that. But by then, we'll be 50. So.
That's right. Yeah. It's so incredible. And can you tell our listeners how long they have to see a game this season?
We are on the 28th of August. Mm-hmm. Our team, the Lexington Legends, are battling for a playoff spot. We're in second place behind the club from Gastonia. We are playing them again tonight. We are a game and a half out of first place. We have 19 games to go before the end of the season, 11 more home games. We play through the 18th, I believe, of September. And when we make the playoffs, I think we play the 19th and 20th. We would host the first two games in the playoffs.
Incredible.
Nothing like a playoff push.
You know what? A pennant race playoff pushes in all sports are fun, but baseball, because of the longevity, it's a drama. It's a 160 act play, and it's just so fun to watch. And the great thing about it is you live and die with it. You know, and I'm a big Reds fan, and I'm going through the same thing with them. At the same time, the Reds and the Legends are both just barely out of the playoffs, and you live and die, and every night just crushes you. And then the night when you win, you're like, we're right in it, you know. And you get to do that day after day after day. And it's not like in basketball or football where you got to wait a little period of time or wait a week. I mean, by golly, you know, we lost tonight. No problem. We'll get them tomorrow.
Right.
And your scoreboard watching.
Oh, scoreboard watching is fantastic. Isn't it? You know, you got one eye on the scoreboard and one eye on the field as you're watching. It's a lot of fun.
It's incredible. And then after the season, doesn't mean the Legends go away. The field is going to have some holiday.
We do a lot of things at Legends Field. But this year we're really excited. We've made a significant commitment to Lexington. We will be hosting for about 6 weeks a Christmas holiday light show called the Festival of Lights. Over 2.5 million lights all around the ballpark. It'll be interactive with petting zoos and vendors and choirs and singing and all sorts of things. And you walk through the village, and it's going to be a really spectacular event. And we have every confidence it's going to be successful. They've done these in some other markets. There's one in Florence, mm-hmm. Another one in Charleston, West Virginia, that have been very successful. There's no reason why ours can't and won't be as well, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, and it's great that it's back to that community-centered model.
You know what? We have to do that. One of the things that we have for fans who've been out in the last couple of years, you've seen that now we have an artificial turf field that is beautiful. As I like to say, the pattern doesn't change very much, but it looks like it's freshly mowed.
Yeah.
And but that gives us the opportunity to do all sorts of things. We're getting back to the days where we hope we're going to be hosting the Kentucky High School Athletic Association State Baseball Championships. We do a lot of other things. We are the home for Transylvania University baseball. They play their entire season at our field, and we have a 20-year agreement with Transy, so that's a long-term partnership. Mm-hmm. But, we do as many high school games as we can. We do American Legion and travel ball. So there's a lot of baseball. But in addition to that, we also have the Lexington – I'm going to get this name wrong, but there's a Lexington Sports Club or something. And they do kickball and soccer and lacrosse, and we do frisbee golf. There's all sorts of different things that go on at the ballpark all the time, and we're going to be getting back into the concert business a little bit on a kind of limited basis. But we can do all of that now because we are on artificial surface, so we're not tearing up the field every time we try to do something. And our goal is to have about 250 events.
Wow.
Event days a mm-hmm. year. Well, we only play 63 Legends games, so
right.
There's a lot of other stuff going
yes.
on at the ballpark.
It's so incredible. And this is, we could talk for hours, Alan.
Yeah. But you probably, I could for
yeah.
sure.
Well, yeah. And we would all love it.
Alan interviewed me one time, and it did last about 4 hours.
we went on and on and on, that's
yeah.
for sure. And I could, that interview could still be going on right now.
it's organic. It just keeps growing.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
This has been fantastic.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for the deep history and for the current events. And we hope that the community continues. And Alan has a question for you.
I have one
yes,
question.
Sir.
Okay, this is the history of sports. What is your favorite memory maybe of attending a sporting event in Lexington?
Oh my gosh,
that's a great question.
Well, I will say this. My grandfather was a huge sports fan. My dad was a tangential sports fan. They both loved baseball. So I had an early introduction to baseball. The very first game that I remember going to, and I think my dad confirmed this over the years, was in August of 1959. I went to a Reds game at Crosley Field, and it was against the San Francisco Giants. And the reason I remember that is my dad loved Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first game there, we went to see Willie Mays, but I had already before that fallen in love with the Cincinnati Reds by listening to Wait Hoyt and Claude Sullivan from Lexington on my little yellow Westinghouse radio late every night. I'd go to bed listening to the Reds, and I had fallen in love with Frank Robinson and Veda Pinson. And on that very first game in Cincinnati, Frank Robinson and Willie Mays both hit home runs.
No, wow.
So I was hooked. I have so many. I've been a season ticket holder for UK football since 1972. But My dad's cousin had season tickets for football and UK basketball. So great memories through all of that. I loved Cotton Nash in the 60s. Talking to Tom Leach and Jack Givens this week about the last game at Memorial Coliseum against Mississippi State. I was there for that. I do have this one memory, again, about my little yellow Westinghouse. It was New Year's Eve, and I can't remember the date, but it had to be around 1961 or two. UK was playing in the basketball Sugar Bowl. Before the Sugar Bowl football game, they had a basketball tournament, and UK was playing Duke. Duke was number one. Kentucky was number two, and Terry Mobley hit a jump shot to win the game at the buzzer, playing in New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl. And I guess I was 8 or 9 years old, and I started yelling and screaming and jumping up and down. And my dad, it was late at night, came running into my room. Let's just say I remember it for reasons other than a basketball game.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, there's so many memories. In 1978, when we won the championship, the basketball championship, and I was in business then, the most incredible event that happened, one that happened in many of those years in 1978 at my bar, was for the national championship game. And we were playing Duke in St. Louis. And we had like 5 TVs that we went out and rented in those days. And, you know, they were 26 inch or whatever they were, but we mounted them all over the place. And one of the funniest memories I have was, and this is a college bar, so it was crazy. People started coming at 7 o'clock in the morning to get their seats in front of these TVs, and they're drinking all day long, and people are so fired up. And the hour before, the game was at 9 o'clock, at 8 o'clock on CBS, all of these people, you know, many of them quite inebriated, college students, crazy, excited, everything. And on the TVs comes the Waltons. So you have all of these, you know, we had 200, you know, wild, crazy college kids sitting in their seats watching the Waltons.
Good night, John Boy.
Oh my gosh.
So much of, you know, the best thing about sports, in my mind, is the ways that it's communal. It's these memories. Yeah. And as you're telling these stories, I'm thinking about what my answer to this would be. And so in 1992.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit younger than Alan, but not much. In 1992, I was 7. And that's my first basketball memory, is the 92 Lanier shot. We were at my great-grandmother's house. Yeah. My parents are huge UK fans. I'm sitting on my dad's lap, and the shot went in, and he kind of threw me across the room because he stood up, right, to be so angry about it.
I get it.
And that is so deep in who I am now 100%. And in that memory. And then in 2012, I was finishing my PhD at UK, and I had made a joke many years earlier that I couldn't leave UK until we won a championship, and lo and behold, the universe was going to hold me to it. So we had been watching that season at Charlie Brown's, on the couches in Charlie Brown's, and I had to teach a UK history class. I was TAing for Tracy Campbell, my mentor. We taught the class, and then I went at 1 p.m. to Charlie Brown's to get our couch, and was there until the horn sounded
at
11 or whatever, 11:30.
Take out your
same
place.
Deal, right? Yeah. Like, they have all the TVs on ESPN. Yep. There's no noise. We're all just like anticipating. But I my memories of that are getting there in the sunshine, like walking there in the sunshine from campus, having John Wall shots all day. Sorry, listeners, I am who I am. And jumping on the couches as the horn sounded, and then going out and being at the corner of Woodland and Euclid, and having, and those are the same stories that my dad can tell in 1978 of coming, of being in Lexington and being at Woodland and Euclid, and the way that sports brings you together for that, right? That you can share those memories and you can say, you know, this mattered to me and this is how I became who I am, and here's my piece of that too. It's just such an uniquely bonding
But you
thing.
Do it in a community.
Yes, yeah.
That's what really makes it. You know, that 92 game, my daughter Hadley had just been born. She was born in June of 91, so this was in April of 92. She wasn't even a year old. And I'm watching that game, and I'm holding her. And when Kristen Leitner's shot came, my instinct was to spike.
Oh, no.
Whatever I had in my hand. Fortunately, I
remembered.
I remembered just in time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it was not violent in any way, but that's it, like that lift up of like, and now I see it. When I'm watching a game, now I'm like, oh, I can feel myself doing it too. Like, I am Dave Duncan's daughter. Yeah. It is happening. It's such
Well, and sports does that for
us.
I mean, it's communal. It's universal. There's no race. There's no politics. We're all in this together. It doesn't matter who we are, what we believe, or what matters to us. We're all in it together. And we see stories and heroes and things that uplift us and deflate us.
Mm-hmm.
Sports is a unique part of who we are, and it's not just in America. It's the world over. I love it, and you know, I've kind of dedicated my life to it. So, I guess I better.
I think that's a perfect place to end. This is beautiful, Alan. Thank you.
Oh yes, absolutely, Alan. Thank you for coming in and really giving us, in as little time as we could possibly do, the history of sports in Lexington. And it was,
I'm glad, you know, I'm retired now, so I got time anytime you want me.
And Mandy, October is coming up, you know. And there's going to be some interesting things there, too.
It's equine month, so all the things we didn't talk about today, we can talk about next month. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we will have an equine professional who's also having a big anniversary this year from horse country. It's their 10th anniversary, so we're working on that. In the meantime, before the next podcast comes out, don't forget to come visit us at the museum. You can see a Scoop Brown signed ball on display. As well as, we didn't really talk about Joe B, but as well as a Joe B Hall folded program.
One of his programs.
Yeah, which is incredible. And some other sports memorabilia in our Intersections 250 Years of Lexington History exhibit. We're open Thursdays and Fridays 12 to 4 and Saturdays 10 to 4. And by appointment, we'd love to have you.
Yes, and we would love it if you would tell your friends to listen to our podcast, which is now on more than a year of these shows, Mandy.
Yeah, we've done a lot.
Yes,
we've covered a lot of Lexington history.
And the good news is it keeps on happening.
It keeps on going.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
you're never going to run out of material.
No, hopefully not.
Well,
I hope.
Yeah. Alan, we're going to bring you back for sure.
You know,
after they win that that championship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And we will see you next time on Lex Talk History.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at LexHistory.org.